Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
If you have a podcast and want to monetize it stress-free, you need the Odyssey Creator Lab. We'll host your podcast for free, and our experienced sales team brings in the advertisers and the revenue. Easy. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.
Welcome to another edition of Better Living, a show about people or organizations having a big impact here in North Texas. I'm your host, Chris Arnold of 105.3 The Fan, and speaking with us right now is my good friend, Mr. Dylan Rafferty. How you doing, Dylan?
Doing great, Chris. Thank you for having me on.
Dylan is the executive director of the North Texas Disability Chamber, and they have been changing thousands of lives here in North Texas. Special needs through accessibility inclusion. And I love what you're doing, Dylan, especially on the few days following North Texas Day of Giving. Can you talk about that big event and how it impacts what you guys do?
Well, you know, I appreciate it, Chris, and thank you. North Texas Giving Day is such an important event for more than 3,500 nonprofits, including ours. Our community organization, we're a community-based organization, focuses on community education, educating the community about the challenges, the obstacles, the opportunities around accessibility and disability inclusion. And one thing that we're emphasizing support is for our Emerging Leaders Fellowship Program. Mm-hmm. And what people don't realize is to fund a program like that, we don't make it a financial burden to the individuals with and without disabilities. And so therefore we cover the cost, and that's about $3,000 per person. And I will say this program has truly surprised me. We just introduced them on our second episode of our podcast, which one day, Chris, you're going to have to be invited on our podcast.
Oh, for sure.
But I will say that our what I've learned is when they first came on to the whole program, they were nervous. They didn't know quite the value is. But now, since I've seen them grown, they took ownership. They took my advice and other people that they got to experience and learn from and put it into their own daily lives and practice. And it's truly remarkable what we're able to do. But we could not do this without the support of our friends and partners and members to support our mission.
You know what? You are a dynamo. Everyone I've ever talked to about you, and again, you and I have been knowing each other for a couple of years now, but you are such a great advocate, but you're such a domino too. Domino, as far as being an advocate and being organized and knowing what it takes to try to network and get people to work together and not exclude those who have disabilities. In other words, accessibility for those with disabilities. So the partnerships are extremely important. And I give you a lot of credit being the executive director of the chamber. When did you come up with this idea of, because I think it was so needed and it's serving so many purposes right now, of having a chamber. And even though you've said it's not like a chamber, It really is a way for different partners and different people with time, talent, and treasure to get together and make sure they're taking care of all things for all people.
Yeah, you know, Chris, you're spot on. I will just say a lot of people don't know is that, you know, I've started this journey since I was 17, 18 years old.
Yeah.
And as a person with disabilities, specifically part of the deaf and hard of hearing community, with spinal back and neck fusion, so I have some limited mobility. And there's some level of learning disability. And because of my personal experiences as a rising leader, now executive of the North Texas Disability Chamber, I've learned through meeting people, building relationships. I think that's so crucial in this day and age.
Yes.
Whether in business, government, or nonprofit, relationship is key to a successful outcome. As Sid Marshall would always say, it's about the outcome.
Mm-hmm.
As my dad would say, it's about the results. And my focus is impact. And how do I turn that impact into outcomes and opportunities for our community? And whether it's policy changes, whether it's empowering organizations like the Mavericks or other sports teams to embrace disability as part of the game day experience, or simply educating large technology companies on improving their bottom line so that they can reach as many people with disabilities through their products and services. And so reality is I started this organization with the vision that our community was going to become the United Nations for North Texas,
nice.
Where government, business, and nonprofit come together, share ideas, transact with one another, and collaborate, and because we're stronger when we work inclusively.
It's amazing what you've been able to do over these years. Can you talk about how you actually had the courage to have the idea? Because to me, anyone who starts a nonprofit, it's just like a small business. You're taking a chance. It's the risk takers that do these things that make, you know, step out of their comfort level to do what they think needs to be done to help communities. So can you talk about the courage it took for you to start this and some of the things you had to overcome?
Yeah, you know, Chris, I will say the when I started this journey, my family was my biggest supporters and my advocates in this area. And so I will say that the challenge that I have in growing this was, frankly, I had to know what I did not know.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had to study. I had to learn about the issues that our community faces, from housing to employment to healthcare, you name it, anything that affects the quality of life for our community. And so long story short is I really was focusing on what are the problems, who are the communities that are trying to solve the problems, and who are the leaders that I need to connect with to help facilitate or convene or simply just get them in the same room and make progress happen. I will say that the challenges that I've had was trying to figure out if this organization is actually needed. It is needed. I will say when I first started, I knew I had to be everywhere. I had to be boots on the ground. I can't just sit up behind a screen like I'm doing right now. Mm-hmm. Sitting behind a screen, I have to literally know who's in the room, how do I get them in the room, and find ways for them to not just work with us, but work with other organizations that can help solve their problems, the world's biggest problems that our region faces.
You know what's interesting? You just said one of the biggest keys, because it's who you know, and it's the networking, and it's the physical networking. It's not just, you know, speaking with people online or having conversations through emails or text. You have to physically see people and then have those conversations where you can directly communicate what is needed. And I think, like I said, you're an inspiration, because I kid you not, you are one of these exciting people that you light up a room wherever you are. And I think you being in front of certain movers and shakers, you know, in the North Texas community, helped get you where you are. Am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong. And I will say, Chris, I don't really talk about it often, because I think it's really what drives me, what people, and they're the nickname I use, even though the famous band is back in the 90s, is called Tenacious D.
Yeah.
I would call myself Tenacious D, Tenacious Dylan. And the reason I say that is because, you know, I'm in a unique position. I come from a blessed family, but I did not have all the great opportunities that most people are given with. And so I had to overcome many obstacles. However, with knowing that, I have a blessed family. I come from a multicultural family that allows me to embrace the diversity around me.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I'm a young a leader who's constantly believes in the stay hungry, keep pushing forward, love the startup landscape and working and empowering organizations and rising them to the top. But I think for me, I'm in a unique position. And I will say is that unfortunately, there's not many people like me in my capacity today that, one, is able to do it,
mm-hmm.
whether the time or money. And frankly, you know, what most people don't realize is I make less than, you know, I'll just say it. I make for my position and what I'm trying to build, I make about an average fast food worker.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not going to support my day-to-day living. But mm-hmm. One thing I noticed is as we continue to grow and scale our impact, That may change, but reality is not about the money. It's about the purpose. It's about the mission, and it's about the impact that we're building. And to me, that is far greater than what I earn or what I bring home or whatnot. It's as long as I'm able to support myself, obviously, but it's really about the impact. And unfortunately, not everybody has that capacity specifically to do this work. And I'm hoping to change that and change that narrative around accessibility and disability inclusion.
You know, what you just said is what I say about teachers, first responders, educators in general. They're not doing this for the money because they're severely underpaid. They're doing it because they care. They're doing it because they know there's a need there. And your role, again, for those who just tuning in, talking with Dylan Rafferty, he's the executive director of the North Texas Disability Chamber. What you're doing is trying to make sure there's accessibility for all kinds of people, especially those with special needs. Accessibility, in other words, sometimes different organizations, they don't know stuff is falling through the cracks, or they don't know that they're not taking care of some other people who can actually enhance their organizations. And so I think you being an advocate, and it's coming from your heart, like you said, the money's going to take care of itself in the long run, but you really enjoy what you're doing. And that's why it's a passion. Again, there's so many people who are proud of you. Can you talk about some of the things you've been able to accomplish with the chamber? In other words, providing some of the things, we're not just some of the programs. I don't talk about the program in just a minute, but just the little things as far as making people aware of those who have special needs. They can still do just about anything if given the opportunity.
Yeah, I'll give you quite a few examples. Mm-hmm. You know, Chris, you come from the sports realm. And yep. So, you know, the Mavericks and the Rangers were our founding professional sports teams that were supporters of our work. And I'll give you some prime examples where we have also obviously started the disability nights, awareness nights, inclusion nights, mm-hmm. With both the Mavericks and the Rangers. But one thing the Rangers did is they brought me on as a strategic advisor on accessibility during the Major League Baseball All-Star Week a couple years ago.
Right.
I helped them streamline without a budget. Remember, without a budget, I helped them streamline accessibility and improve it, where now they've set a standard for future All-Stars going forward.
Excellent. Like for DFW, Major League Baseball. Yes.
Yeah. Major League Baseball. So DFW Airport, for example, they just launched an inclusion and accessibility committee. So I brought in leaders with disabilities who are frequent travelers who mm-hmm. go through DFW Airport, and we are investigating and recommending technology solutions to streamline their overall experience while making it safe, secure, accessible, and inclusive. In addition to that, we're also helping them look into their sensory room that they're looking to build at almost every terminal at mm-hmm. DFW Airport. Another good example is we're helping a large company called Samsung Electronics America, helping them improve accessibility with their technology solutions on their products, specifically phones that serve people with disabilities on accessibility. Another great example is we're helping nonprofits. Like, for example, we partner with the city of Richardson, their local government. We just did an event at the Eisman Center. Mm-hmm. And I will tell you, I learned some things and I said, you know what, we've got to make this better for nonprofits to utilize their space, because today it's meant for production, not meant for nonprofits to rent their facilities. And so long story short is they've now developed a new plan and they're going to present it later this fall to benefit nonprofits. And that is because it came from us. We
Excellent.
Help educate mm-hmm. and help support organizations of any size, no matter what industry, to ensure that it not only benefits our community, but also benefits other people within the same industry and support.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
You've built a great podcast.
that content's solid, the audience is growing, but the money, still not where it should be. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your podcast for free, so you can keep doing your thing while our experienced sales team does their thing, finding advertisers and bringing in revenue. No fees, no stress, just real monetization. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.
You, what you're doing, like I said, is a mission, and it's exciting, and it, and again, it's leveling the playing field, and it's allowing people to have more accessibility to all the things that we sometimes take for granted. And I want to use one example. At the event you asked me, and I was gracious, I was so grateful that you asked me to MC and moderate. It was a luncheon a few weeks ago, and I looked up on the screen, and you had subtitles. And every time anyone, whether it was me or you or any of the guest speakers, spoke on the microphone, those subtitles showed all the words that were spoken. And a lot of people to this day either take that for granted or never thought about it. But I thought about that technology because literally there are so many people, including my kids, who will not watch a movie on Netflix unless the subtitles are showing. And I'm like, you know, that's just the little things like that that a lot of major corporate people don't think about, and it's huge.
Yeah, and you know, I'll give you I'm so glad you brought it up, because sometimes I always tell people I can preach to the choir, but it only is as impactful if people like yourself, Chris, that recognize it.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I will say is with the Mavericks, Theo O'Bannon often shared with me a couple years ago, right when we just established our organization, she asked me, what is the one thing that the Mavericks should do to improve accessibility? And I said, well, wait a minute, you guys have a lot of great digital content, especially videos. Have you ever considered to adopt captions in your videos automatically, especially on Instagram? And they do it now. And I think they took that into consideration and realized, yeah, not everybody is going to listen to the audio component.
Right.
They just like to have the actual captions read as they're scrolling on Instagram or any other kind of platform. Another good example, Chris, is we actually helped the city of Plano and then the neighboring city of Allen. Both city of Plano and Allen became the 7th and 8th city in America and the 1st and 2nd in Texas to adopt a resolution to include captions on public-facing television.
Awesome.
Imagine how incredible that is.
Yes.
And I would love for other cities to follow suit.
Yeah. And again, the technology is there. It's just sometimes you're not even aware that that one little thing can actually impact and help people's lives. Also, you had someone doing sign language while the program was going on. And a lot of people are aware that a lot, and especially in sporting events, because the national anthem is performed in a lot of different sporting events, whether it's, you know, grade school, high school, college, professional sports, you have someone signing the national anthem. But there's a person doing sign language at certain programs and events and galas. And that's also important because it just adds to those who want to participate or at least share in the moments.
Yeah. And then I will say, not everybody that is deaf and hard of hearing wants to just use captions. And here's the thing. I always tell people, we're going to provide accessibility no matter what event we do. And captioning is a standard, but also adding the ASL interpreter, whether or not people in the room use ASL, it's still about, it's what I call good CSR, mm-hmm. good corporate social responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
If you are an organization that represents a community, no matter how big or small, you want to make sure good corporate social responsibility is that we're doing everything we can to ensure that we're providing a space that is accessible for everybody, no matter what their choice or option is, they have it there ready and available to them. It is my challenge for organizations like Dallas Regional Chamber and other organizations that do these large scale events. You know, for me, I need caption, but I don't necessarily use ASL as my form of communication. Others do. And so rather than just waiting for somebody to ask for accommodation, let's make it a standard of practice. And that's what I would encourage all organizations, no matter how big or small, to incorporate that.
You know, the North Texas Disability Chamber has a lot of partners, a lot of corporate partners as well, a lot of people giving their time, talent, and treasure. But I also like the fact, and by the way, the website is absolutely amazing, amazing. And I always bring up websites on this podcast and this radio show because in this day and age of Amazon, where people shop online and they peruse and they look at things online, that's almost like your calling card. If you have a website that's manageable, easy to access, easy to read, people can enjoy it at their leisure and find out things at their own pace about what's going on. And it's ntxdc.org. That is where you can find out more information. But I like the fact that you have all these different committees. You have an advocacy committee, an early childhood education committee, emerging leaders committee, and we just talked about them a little earlier with the program for them, marketing committee, ambassadors committee, events committee, health equity committee, and relationships committee. Dylan, your fingerprints are all over this thing because this is the way your mind works. I'm so impressed.
Well, again, I think one thing that I have learned through, again, it comes from visually understanding what is out there in the community and how can we either replicate it mm-hmm. or do something better. And I will say our annual meetings, for example, we feature 16 speakers in under 2 hours. Woo. Think about that. We, in other annual meetings, they highlight one subject and then they cut off the whole time. To me, that's boring.
Right.
And that's why I want people to understand that we want to highlight the region and we want to highlight people who are doing this work and while echoing the work that we're trying to do. Another good prime example is, because of our members and partners, basically, we really need to amplify more corporate engagement or employee engagement with our nonprofit community. Mm-hmm. Hence why coming up on October 10th and 11th, we're doing the inaugural North Texas Disability Days of Service
yes.
in partnership with Communities Foundations of Texas and CFP Center for Business Impact. And we have about 8 nonprofits participating, over 80 volunteer opportunities available over 2 days. And we're doing a kickoff breakfast. Again, this is a lot of work, but I will say I'm so grateful for Communities Foundation of Texas to be able to partner with us in this effort because we can't do this work alone. Mm-hmm. It's better to work with others who are similar or shared visions or values that can do this work. They are a leader in volunteering. They're a leader in collecting donations to support area nonprofits. But more than not, we're also a leader in supporting the disability community with other nonprofits serving our community. And so we combined the forces and basically said, you know what? We've got an employer network. They want to volunteer. Let's put an emphasis on our area nonprofits with disabilities. And so that's just one example of why I think it's so important that you bring the right people in the room. And, you know, you highlighted the committees. Yeah, those committees are led by people,
yeah.
people willing to give up their time. And on top of that, all of our partners have access to be on our advisory board. In addition to that, it's a great way to pipeline so that they can eventually one day serve on our executive board, which is a decision-making body. In addition, I've added last year, at becoming CEO last year, mm-hmm. I added a special advisors, and these are esteemed guests, including
yes.
Sint Marshall. Sint Marshall accepted to be my special advisor, mm-hmm. and they advise me as I navigate this journey in my young executive journey to move our community forward.
Can I tell everybody your age? Because again, what you're doing is so amazing. You're only 31.
No, 35.
35. Look at you. You've grown up before our eyes. This is crazy. But still, you're not even 40 years old. You're getting so many things done in this small period of time. But again, it just shows if your heart is there, you know, this is what gets things done. Because it's not work. It's like this is what you do. And you're always conceiving of things or you're dreaming of things and things have been happening. Can you mention one of the things? I know it's like picking a favorite child, but one of the favorite things that you've accomplished so far with the organization?
That's a tough one.
It's very tough.
know, Chris, you've got to give me that scripture if I had all kidding aside. But I will say the most impact, there's always going to be quantitative and qualitative results. Mm-hmm. For me, from what I've seen, is mainly qualitative. And I will say this, my most proudest moment, there's actually a couple of them.
Okay.
First and foremost, more and more people with disabilities, specifically professionals with disabilities, are coming to our events and feeling a sense of belonging. That has never existed before, mm-hmm. because there's other forms that don't necessarily, like, for example, I've been in networking events where they automatically assume, oh, you're deaf? I did not know that. And that to me creates a uncomfortable experience. Mm-hmm. And so instead, when they come to our events, people know they're expecting to see people with disabilities. Mm-hmm. Instead of having us automatic comments like that, they come in with, how can we support one another? And that to me is so impactful. Another thing I'm realizing, and I noticed it at our Works Luncheon recently, is more and more nonprofits in the disability space are coming together at our events and transacting each other, meaning they're supporting each other despite knowing that they are competing for the same amount of money or funding. Mm-hmm. They're coming together, they're collaborating, they're sharing ideas, and most importantly, they're supporting one another at each other's events. How amazing is that to witness from afar?
Yes.
And that to me is why this organization is so impactful, is that it's why we call it a disability chamber, is because we're partnering with business, government, and nonprofit communities to come together to share ideas, transact with another, and most importantly, collaborate. I mean, we cannot do this work alone, especially when we live in a state we're near dead last in lack of funding and social mm-hmm. services for our community.
Mm-hmm. You know, what's also interesting is the fact that I think people's eyes are becoming more open to all types of people can do all types of jobs. And it's not just the cookie cutter, you know, you go to college, get a degree, or you go to a vocational school and you can do whatever you need to do there. There's all kinds of people that can do all kinds of things. And I think, you tell me, because you live it, Did it help on this side of the pandemic when a lot of different businesses, small or large, corporations or whatever, made the quote unquote pivot and realized there are people who can work from home. There are people who don't have to work 9 to 5. There are people who are talented, but they don't necessarily, you know, look like whoever you see in a sitcom television show. Can you talk about how that might have opened some eyes to help empower and employ people with disabilities?
Yeah, absolutely, Chris. I will say before the pandemic, we often had the world of accommodation. Mm-hmm. Well, since the pandemic, I've been telling people that we need to change the word accommodation to flexibility.
Yes.
And why? Because our community likes and needs flexibility, whether working from home or working on site. Some of them like quiet environments. Some of them like noisy environments. Some of them like to be in front of the scenes. Some of them like to be behind the scenes. The idea is to provide a flexible work-life culture balance. Some people don't believe in that message, but reality is we are already overworked. We are expected to do more. But at the end of the day, it's about the culture. It's about embracing community, embracing the work-life balance, but also our community values flexibility. We need to go away from accommodation, which is basic minimal, to flexibility and say, you know what, this is the standard of practice. The benefit that I have in my position now is that I have the flexibility to either work from home, mm-hmm. work at a co-working space, or even go to different parts of Texas, North Texas, to visit with our nonprofits and business partners. But I will say is that flexibility has been, since the pandemic, provided an increase of employee participation among people with disabilities. However, knowing that a lot of the companies have already scaled back, went back into in-person, mm-hmm. yes, some of those jobs have been taken away, and we still have a high unemployment rate among people with disabilities. And that is, frankly, a problem.
Right.
But I will say is that I think companies are willing to adapt and adjust so that we can accommodate certain types of this workforce. But at the end of the day, it's really going to come down to culture. And that's why people with disabilities and those without disabilities, we value culture and the company's commitment to the community at large more than just the work-life balance. And I think, every company is different. And I always encourage people with and without disabilities to do their homework. And before committing to an organization that may or may not fit, align, or align with your values.
Exactly. It must align. And at the same time, I've noticed that a lot of people with special needs or disabilities are more committed and more to the organization that gives them the opportunity. They're more loyal. So the loyalty has to be reciprocated.
Yes, 100%. In fact, I think for me, I've worked with a number of employers, both startups and corporate or Fortune 500. I will say that it's really, I think what everybody wants is that we want to be valued, we want to be trusted, and we want to be well respected. And if we don't have those three things, it makes it harder for people to have, or mainly companies, have a good retention rate. People with disabilities are often retained for a long period of time compared to those without disabilities. And so I think, and oftentimes many of those individuals with disabilities, frankly, that is their only job or the only opportunity they have ever received compared to their counterparts. But at the same time, we have a lot of well-educated individuals with disabilities. Some people don't know on this radio that I'm actually pursuing my doctorate. I'm in my final year at USC, University of Southern California, to get my Doctor of Education. And
congratulations.
Even though I had a master's and a bachelor's and all those great things, it didn't necessarily land me opportunities, but it did land me credibility. It landed me trust, it landed me with respect, and then more and more people are willing to invest in me. But it didn't necessarily land me careers, and probably because I'm in a multidisciplinary field type educational programs. But reality is there are some people that are much more technical savvy than me. I'm more, you know, social side of it. But I will say is that people with disabilities are truly a powerhouse when it comes to working with organizations, and they do want to work. It's just a matter of, are we valued? Can you trust us? And can you, will you respect us?
Exactly. He is Dylan Rafferty. He's the CEO of the North Texas Disability Chamber, and they're changing lives, thousands of lives in North Texas with special needs through accessibility inclusion. Dylan, thanks so much for joining us. Can you tell where people can find out more information about the North Texas Disability Chamber, the website, et cetera?
Yes, absolutely. Chris, again, thank you for having me on. Our website is www.ntxdc.org. Or you can go find us on LinkedIn, Facebook, or Instagram at North Texas Disability Chamber. You can, and now for those who want to follow me and the work that we're doing, I'm constantly posting. Go find me on LinkedIn, Dylan, D-Y-L-A-N, Dylan M, and then Rafferty, R-A-F-A-T-Y. Follow me on LinkedIn, send me a message. We're always looking to build relationships. And if you, again, if you can find more, just come out, reach out. And I would encourage people to show up to our events. Please show up to our events. And I always tell people, and you heard this, Chris, show up, be present, and show out.
Yes, yes. And the next opportunity is October 10th and October 11th. And explain what that is again about the days of service.
Yes, the Disability Days of Service, in partnership with Community Foundations of Texas, we are providing employers and or individuals who want to volunteer for 8+ nonprofits in our area, dedicated to serving people with disabilities. They're great opportunities. We're also going to have a free kickoff breakfast at Community Foundation of Texas on Friday, October 10th at 8 a.m. You can find all that information on our website under our events tab. So www.ntxdc.org/events.
Dylan, you are the best. Thanks again for joining us. And I'll be seeing you wherever I see you next, because you're everywhere.
And always, Chris Arnold, go Bats.
Appreciate you. He's Dylan.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Fee and fees apply. In-app only.
Make money from your podcast with the Odyssey Creator Lab. You create the show. We bring the advertisers. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com.
And join us right now is Sylvia Powers of CelebratingLifeFoundation.org. The mission of Celebrating Life Foundation is to make cancer powerless by educating, encouraging, and empowering individuals and communities to fight breast cancer through awareness, early detection, and support for those affected by this disease. Sylvia, how are you doing this morning?
Oh, I am doing absolutely amazing, Chris. Thanks so much for having me.
Oh, we're glad to have you on because you have been an advocate for breast cancer awareness for years and years and years, and you've got a big event coming up. And before we specifically talk about that event, October, of course, is Breast Cancer Awareness Month, but people talk about breast cancer awareness 24/7, 365, and you're a part of the movement. Can you talk about how people are aware of breast cancer and doing all they can to fight for it?
Thanks so much, Chris, for bringing that out, because so many people think about October as Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and people come out, they'll have pink hair, pink nails, everybody will be wearing pink, you know, special breast cancer awareness shirts. And then October 30th, it dies down, and on Halloween, everybody comes out with their costumes, and then the next thing, they put their things on the shelves. But for people that are advocates, people that are survivors, family members, caregivers, they realize that that doesn't end the journey.
Right.
It's as you mentioned, it's a all year, every day thing. And that's the only way we can really make an impact. One of the things that I've been concerned about for the three decades I've been involved with breast cancer is the high mortality rate of African-American women to breast cancer. Mm-hmm. When I started this journey, African-American women had a disproportionate rate of dying from the disease than any other ethnic group. And today, currently, African-American women are 41% more likely to die from breast cancer than any other ethnic group. And that's what we want to change.
Is it an early detection thing, or is it because of blood cells?
There, I think so many different variables when you come into looking at how the disease impacts our community. One, of course, is early detection and screenings. But really, in all honesty, the options have changed over the last three decades. There are more opportunities if people don't have insurance. Across the country, there are various programs that offer free screening. Even here in Dallas, we have the Bridge Breast Network, which not only helps people that don't have insurance get screened, but for those that fall in the gaps that are under the age of 40 and need to get a mammogram, they help those women get mammograms. Or if they don't have insurance and they need what is called a diagnostic mammogram, and they even help with treatment and surgery for women that don't have insurance. So really, that should not be a barrier. But I think when I look at some of the things I've experienced in the community, there's something you can't get past, and that's when people have fear. They can have insurance. They can know about resources. But if they're afraid, that is a polarizing thing that you can't get beyond.
Can we get specific with that? Because I think you're onto something. I think sometimes people just don't want to know because they either think it's incurable or it might just affect their lives. And right now they can't afford anything changing their lives right now.
That is correct. And I think that just knowing that your family member has had breast cancer or that there is some issue in your family, those things are cause fear.
Right.
And that's something that we can't get over with with early detection or with information.
Can you talk about early detection in specific? Because I think a lot of people have heard the term, but they don't know necessarily what it is exactly. Like, is it a lump? You feel a lump? Can you talk about how you say, okay, wait a minute, I might not have even felt a lump, but I need to get, you know, a mammogram.
Yes. There is, in reference to like the guidelines as far as, okay, I'm sorry. Can you repeat the question?
Yeah. The question is, can you talk about when people and ladies in particular learn about early detection? In other words, do you feel a lump or do you say, you know what, I need to take a mammogram anyway, because I didn't even feel a lump?
I think that, number one is when you get into a certain age range, mm-hmm. you need to have a mammogram. If you're over the age of 40, you definitely need to have a mammogram. And if you have a family history, that could be earlier. But one of the things that I've been working with is people who have, it's a rare form of breast cancer called inflammatory breast cancer. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't present itself in the form of a lump. It's like an irritation. The breast may be red. Mm-hmm. The breast starts to look like an orange peel. Mm-hmm. It has a whole, but there's no lump. And so many times this form of breast cancer goes misdiagnosed because it's treated like an infection, and people go through different you know, routines of come back in 6 months. Mm-hmm. And it's very aggressive. So a lot of times when they do get diagnosed, it's going to be in the later stages of the disease. And that form of breast cancer is extremely aggressive. So as we get ready for October, our message has been to say more than a lump, so that women realize that it's not just a lump, but if you notice some change in mm-hmm. your breast, you need to get it checked out.
Mm-hmm. Is it easier to like go with a friend? I mean, I'm just trying to figure out the best way to encourage people who might be afraid to, you know, at least get the test or at least find out where you are. Or is it better with your sister, somebody in your family, your mom? Can you talk about the different ways to encourage people to be checked out?
I think, of course, if you can go with a friend or a family member, those things are going to be better. If you really are dealing with fear, mm-hmm. Going with somebody else, that can make it easier. That's why it's important that we have a network with yes. our friends and with our family, because you know when you've got a friend and something is going on with them. They may not be specific, but mm-hmm. they'll say, oh, you know, I've been experiencing this. And so that we encourage them to go ahead and get the treatment that they need. I remember I was speaking with a friend and I had something going on and she's like, okay, so you're going to the doctor tomorrow, you know, so, mm-hmm. you got to have that kind of support mechanism, because the worst thing you can do, because a non-decision actually is a decision.
Right. A non-decision means you've said no. You might
right.
you might be saying you, and procrastination doesn't help anybody, especially doesn't help you. Can you also talk about how, you know, the fact that over the last few years, maybe it encourages people to not be afraid because it's talked about so much, that, you know, breast cancer awareness, or like you said, you've been, you know, being an advocate for this for like 3 decades. So, you know, right. how it's become more, I don't want to use the phrase mainstream, but people are aware, but they still need to go ahead and take that step. And maybe it's with your girlfriend or your sister, your mom or somebody, but you still need to get checked. And like you said, checked on the regular, right?
Correct. I mean, on an annual basis, mm-hmm. and that could be different if you notice something. Like if you've had a mammogram 6 months ago and then all of a sudden you have a lump, then you still need to go back and have that checked out, or something extremely different is going on with your breast. That doesn't mean that you need to wait till that next year to get seen. If you mm-hmm. notice something different, it needs to be addressed right away. But you are so right, Chris. There has been a dramatic change. I've seen the total shift in the last three decades of dealing with breast cancer. Back when I first started, it was hard to talk to people in minority communities, especially in our community. Mm-hmm. It was very difficult to get a dialogue about breast cancer. Now you hear all kinds of forums.
Yes.
People are sharing. Churches, most churches have some kind of a health group if they don't have a group that's specifically for breast cancer. So that has changed, and the information is more, as you would say, mainstream. There are articles, there are blogs, there are things on Facebook, and people are public, where it used to be my business is my business. I think with the generation shift that in social media, people post. They'll say, yes. I just found out I got breast cancer. They will
share.
They will share. They will go chronologically go through their whole experience. I'm going to the doctor. I'm having chemo, which are things that you just did not see in years previously. So in so many ways, that's good, because when somebody is diagnosed, they don't feel like it's the end of the world.
Right.
Because, oh, I just saw my coworker go through this, or I just saw my cousin go through this. So it's not like this is a long journey, where before, when I first started out, you found out somebody had cancer. Next thing you know, you were hearing that they were really sick, and you know, there were so many mortality rate. But what I have seen, the one biggest change, is that medical technology research is so much better today. So when you find out that somebody is like stage three, stage four, it's not the end.
Right.
I mean, they live for a long time in the latter stages of the disease and have a great quality of life.
Can you talk about, again, you're talking about the survivors. Can you talk about how, you know, the different organizations, including, you know, CelebratingLifeFoundation.org, is taking care of survivors, or at least being around survivors and supporting survivors in various ways, and how that is important, and that how people actually are proud of survivors, as opposed to survivors are, well, my auntie got that and she kind of is sick and shut in and we don't really talk about it. I mean, it's a whole new way people approach this thing.
Right. It is. And I can hear like the sort of excitement in your voice, because that's the way it is now.
Mm-hmm.
When people talk about that they've had breast cancer or any form of cancer, it's not necessarily this gloom and doom anymore. And one of the things that we do when we have our event, we have special shirts for breast cancer survivors so that they can stand out. We have a room where they can be pampered. And organizations across the country that deal with breast cancer survivors, they're organizations such as ours that do rental assistance or meals, transportation. They do self-care events so that it is engaging for the survivors. So it's more of a time of bonding. There are people that do jewelry classes and different special events. So it's not that that gloom and doom like it might have been years ago.
Yes, uplifting. In fact, that helps people survive, because you're not throwing a pity party, and it's making you feel healthy when you know that there are people who are supporting you, which leads me naturally to talk about CelebratingLifeFoundation.org. Can you talk about your organization? And I love the fact that you call it Celebrating Life Foundation, as opposed to, oh no, what are we going to do now, Foundation?
Well, to be honest, Chris, the way the name came is the organization started in reference to a book that I wrote 30 years ago called Celebrating Life, African American Women Speak Out About Breast Cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And when I wrote the book, I had like all the stories together, and I was like putting them in stacks, trying to figure out where they fit in. And I had one stack, and it was women that were under 30 that were diagnosed. And I was like, okay, these are too young to get breast cancer. Then I had some stories where the doctor said that the person had 6 months to live. So I'm like, okay, when the doctor says it's too late. And then I had a whole group of ladies that were all in their 40s. And so I was like, okay, this is finding it at 40. But I had to look at what did all of them have in common, no matter if they were diagnosed and had a good prognosis, or when the doctor said they had 6 months to live, whether they were 25 or 89, what did they have in common? And the one common thread is they were all celebrating life. And that's how I came up with the name.
It's exciting. And again, it's the, to me, it's an encouraging way to look at the situation of breast cancer awareness. Sylvie, tell people more about yourself, your story.
Well, I actually, the way I got involved with breast cancer is that I have an aunt that was very dear to me. I stayed with her my last year of high school. And when I was in college, she was diagnosed with breast cancer. And I had a chance, I was working with a public service radio station. I got a chance to interview some people. But none of those were from our community. So mm-hmm. I sort of felt like Minnie Riperton, who was somebody I just love.
Yes,
and
me
was
too.
One of the first artists to come out and talk about breast cancer. I thought she and my aunt had just gotten caught up in something that really wasn't impacting our community. But when my aunt's breast cancer came back and it was really aggressive, I just started talking to people, and I found out everybody I talked to said, oh yeah, my aunt had breast cancer. Oh, my mother had breast cancer. The biggest surprise was those people that said I had breast cancer. And these were people that I knew.
Wow.
And I was like, well, when did you have breast cancer? Mm-hmm. And so I realized, even though we weren't talking about it, that it didn't mean this, that it had passed us by, and it didn't mean that it wasn't impacting us. And that's when I started on this journey as a writer and photographer to do a book, show the stories of these survivors, and to show their pictures, because mm-hmm. I was getting such bleak images. Like when you find these survivors, you know, they're not going to be wanting to have their picture taken. They're, you know, but that wasn't the case. I found these vibrant, spirited women mm-hmm. that were anxious to share their stories, and they were vivacious no matter what was going on with them. And so that's how I got started. And there's no doubt in this journey, I have met so many survivors. And not only have I touched their lives, but they have touched mine in an amazing way.
On a side note, I'm so glad you brought up Minnie Riperton, because for those who don't know, Minnie Riperton, her voice was so amazing. She was like Mariah Carey before Mariah Carey, with her range. And her daughter is the famous actress comedian Maya Rudolph from Saturday Night Live fame. And I just admired Minnie Riperton myself. And by the way, Sylvie, you look like you could be her other daughter. I'm serious.
Thank you. I was a huge fan, and I used to get that when she was singing, and that was the greatest compliment. I thought the world of her, and I actually got a chance to talk to her husband when I was working on the book project.
That is fantastic. Again, we're talking with Sylvia Powers, and we're talking about breast cancer awareness. You mentioned her husband. Mm-hmm. For some, they don't know that men can actually also get breast cancer, and it could be fatal as well. Can you touch on that just a little bit? Because I know we lost Richie Roundtree, Shaft, the original Shaft. He had breast cancer.
Yes, and amazingly enough, when Richard Roundtree came out and started talking about he had breast cancer, we were having a luncheon in Dallas.
Really?
And I was able to get him to come to Dallas and speak for us.
Wow.
And that was just so wonderful. And when he started sharing his testimony, he even began to tear up, because he talked about what it was like to be a male in Hollywood, and the fact that you have to have this image of being flawless.
Right. Strong. He's an action hero. He's a hero.
And he's Shaft. You know, he's the man. And
shut your mouth. Talking about Shaft, and we can dig it. Yeah.
And so he said that he had a scene, and he had to remove his shirt And he really didn't want to. He says, well, you guys can build me like a muscle shirt. And but finally, the straw was that he had to remove his shirt. There was no other option. So he had to tell them the reason that he didn't want to remove his shirt was because he had a scar on his chest because he had had breast cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And he, you know, he talked about what that was like, feeling like you were damaged goods and, you know,
right.
in Hollywood. But he went on to continue to have an amazing career.
Mm-hmm.
And it's somebody that's iconic that we will always pay homage to.
Always. Coming up next for the CelebratingLifeFoundation.org, you've got the Sister to Sister Fitness Festival. Can you
yes.
talk about that? It's the 24th annual, and it's coming up in Cedar Hill. Can you talk about it? It's October the 4th, I believe?
Yes, it is October the 4th from 8 a.m. to 12:30. We have a 5K walk run that is a part of the event. It is a timed event. So for those who like to run and like to do 5Ks, they can have that experience. We give medals out to the first 350 people that cross the finish line.
Nice.
And we have the best swag bags around. I've done 13 5Ks this year, and I know without a fact, I'm not just saying it, but we come with the swag with our swag bags. And for the survivors, it is like a ridiculous experience. We have a pampering room where they get manicures, they get facials, and their bags are the absolute best. We'll have food trucks on site, and of course, we're going to have you out there too. So.
Yes, I'm glad to be a part of it. Thanks for inviting me. Yeah.
and the reason for that, Chris, is that this year our theme is Riding the Blue Wave.
Mm-hmm.
And we wanted to talk about the importance of men in the journey. We will have a male breast cancer survivor, Clifford Armstead, who is actually a 9-year breast cancer survivor. He's going to start the race off.
Mm-hmm.
We've got Harrison Blair, who is the CEO of the Black Chamber of Commerce.
My guy.
Yes, he's awesome. So we wanted to show that men are involved in the cause. Scoop Jefferson from Channel 8 will also be there.
Mm-hmm.
And we just, because even when you just look at survivors and you look at women survivors, men help them, their husbands, their spouses, their boyfriends, their sons, they all become a part of the journey. So we wanted men to know that they're not left out of this cause, and we celebrate what they bring to us in helping in this journey.
And it's going to be at the Allen Sims Cedar Hill Rec Center, right? That's where it's going to
yes,
start?
It's at the Allen E. Sims Cedar Hill Recreation Center at 310 East Parkerville Road.
It is so scenic over there. You better have your legs.
Oh yeah, it's a beautiful walk though.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, the places it is really warm, and we've been blessed. We've been doing this event at the Cedar Hill Recreation Center since 2009. We started off at Keys Park, and mm-hmm. this has just been a great home for the event. And we love the hospitality that we get in Cedar Hill. It's just, you know, it's just a wonderful environment, and we love it, and we're excited at the people that will come on and join us.
It's going to be fantastic. And again, it's another part of Breast Cancer Awareness Month of October. But like you said earlier in this conversation, this is 365 24/7 because
yes.
I think so many people know someone affected by the disease or have fought the disease themselves or lost someone who's affected by this disease. You had mentioned, you know, Richard Roundtree a little earlier. You had a nice situation with Emmett Smith because his sister also was affected with breast cancer, right?
Yes. Yes. In fact, I had worked with Emmett back when he was with the Dallas Cowboys. I mm-hmm. had an opportunity to do a calendar for him. And as a result of that, I was doing some work with his sister, Marsha.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm grateful that we kept, you know, a level of communication through the years. But Marsha was diagnosed with breast cancer, and she has been very supportive of our organization, and she's actually been an honorary chair. And during that time, Emmett did a PSA to help us to promote the walk. And yes. This past March, she was featured in an exhibit that I did at Caesar's Palace in Las Vegas. And at that time, Emmett was out of the country, but his other brothers mm-hmm. and Marsha, we went to his restaurant in Vegas.
That is fantastic. And again, it's so many, put it like this, there's so many ways that you can bring awareness to breast cancer and wearing the pink. And it's also interesting that in the world of sports, you know, guys will support it because their mom or their sister or somebody,
right.
they'll wear pink shoes or they'll wear something pink. And so it's just to subconsciously remind everyone, cancer is not anybody's friend. And some of them even go as far to F cancer. You know, they can't take it. They can't take it.
I haven't been able to make that turn.
Right.
Yes, you're correct.
Right. But that's part of the battle as well. So again, we want to make sure that everyone is all supportive of organizations like CelebratingLifeFoundation.org. Can you tell people where they can find more information beyond the website, or is there some things we want to make sure people are aware of?
Okay, for sure. Definitely, if you go to our website, www.celebratinglife.org, at the very top of the website, there is a zip code locator. And so no matter where somebody is, what state they're in, they can put their zip code, and that's going to give them resources that are available in their area. Because there's so many components of the journey. We think about early detection, you think about screening, you think about surgery, but when all that's over, people still have to have a roof over their head. They still have to have transportation. One of the things that we found as we got more intimate in aftercare, that there were survivors missing treatment, even missing surgery
oh, wow.
because of transportation. So those variables are important. This year, I've found more clients that are actually dealing with homelessness because they're reduced income because of treatment, and trying to navigate that and still be able to pay their mortgages, pay their rent. Those things are real. And so just having resources, and I'm so fortunate that I have relationships with people that are in what my friends call this pink space. So if we get a client, sometimes maybe we can help them with one thing, and then I can call somebody else and they can help them with the other thing, so that we can come together to make sure we're providing the best experience for those that need assistance.
You said that so well. Thanks, Sylvia, for being with us today.
Thank you so much for having me, Chris. This has been an amazing experience, and I appreciate the opportunity to share.
For sure. And thank you all for joining us on Better Living, a show about people or organizations having a big impact here in North Texas. I'm Chris Arnold. So long, everybody.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Fee and fees apply. In app only.
If you have a podcast and want to monetize it stress-free, you need the Odyssey Creator Lab. We'll host your podcast for free, and our experienced sales team brings in the advertisers and the revenue. Easy. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.